Welcome to Gen Z Hoops, the Gen Z basketball, coaching, and sports business show.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Gen Z Hoops podcast. And today I'm joined by starting shooting guard for Germani Brescia of the LBA in Italy, Mr. John Petrucelli. Mr. Petrucelli, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good, man. How's everything with you?
Oh, I can't complain. Thank you so much for coming on the show. So to jump into our little discussion, can you talk a little bit about your connection to the game of basketball?
Yeah, I mean, I started when I was five, and I kind of fell in love with it right away, playing on my little play school hoop. And my parents started me in the little PAL leagues, kind of around the neighborhood, when I was in elementary school. So, and then from there, I played, it was fall ball, spring ball, summer ball, and I played kind of all year round and fell in love with it. And there were other sports that I played, but for me, basketball was always like number one.
Oh yeah, most definitely. What was like your connection, like playing, like watching the NBA as a kid? Like I grew up like watching like a little bit of like the Lin Sanity times in New York, that 2011, 2012 season. That's like when I started really getting into it. Like who was like some sort of player that like got you into watching the game?
Yeah. For me, it was Bron in like the early 2000s. And I've always been a big LeBron fan.
Got him on the wall back there.
Yeah. He's always been, for me, he's been my, I mean, obviously there's Mike, and I always say Mike is the GOAT, but I look at it as like generational GOATs, you know? So for me and my generation, LeBron for me is the GOAT of my generation. I caught Mike at the end, when he was with, the Wizards.
Right.
Which he was still hooping, but he wasn't like, he wasn't Chicago Mike.
Right.
And you know, in the 90s, I was still young. You know, I was born in 92. So, by the time 2003 came and Bron came into the league, like I kind of was understanding the game more and watching it a lot more. So, I didn't get to really watch a lot of Mike live. I caught all his stuff, after the fact, highlights and all that. But for me, it was, like I said, bro, for me, it was Bron.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. Well, I can connect to that actually, because my mom and her sister are actually like huge Miami Heat fans. So like, I was like preaching all the stuff about like Carmelo Anthony and the Knicks, and then like the Knicks were actually playing the Heat like a little down the line. She was like, "Let me show you who the best player in the world is." And then it was just like Bron just stealing the ball from J.R. Smith and tomahawk dunking it on the other end. So I fell in love with him ever since then.
Exactly. Well, how old are you?
Oh, I'm 19 now.
19. So, yeah. So. What is that?
I was in like first or second grade.
2000 and
12. Oh, 2004. I was born.
Yeah. So yeah. So you didn't even understand
what he. I didn't catch early Cavs, Bron. Yeah.
Bro, what this guy was doing was unbelievable. So
it's like nuclear athleticism. I see like all the clips on Instagram nowadays, like, and then like to showcase his longevity as well. Like they show that. It's kind of like a famous picture, actually. It's like his head like on the backboard catching a lob, kind of. And then it shows like 2016 when Kyrie threw it. Then like 2021 when AD threw it, and they were just like comparing it through the years. So I always like found that amazing.
Yeah, his longevity has been insane, because if you looked at year 20, what other guys did in year 20, like Dirk, I think Vince, and you look AG. At... Yeah, bro, they're like not even close. It's not even close. I think the highest was maybe Kobe, but I don't think he was.
He wasn't averaging like 20, high 20s like LeBron.
I think it was 17. I think it was 17 he was averaging. He was the highest. It's ridiculous. So.
And I also think it's amazing, like, the standard LeBron's always been held at, too, as well. Like, it's always like championship or bust, where it's like other greats like Dirk, Kobe, and stuff like that. They just got to like ride out the end of their career, and they. Like basically guys just wanted to see them hoop, but like LeBron still has that like pressure with him
right
now.
It's crazy. So,
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, back, let's go back to talking about your career. So you attended Hicksville High School in Hicksville, New York, fellow Long Island and Queens guy. Let's go. So reflecting on your high school career, what were the biggest takeaways from those years?
So my sophomore year is when I started varsity. My freshman year at the end, they had called me up just for like, I don't know, I guess the end of the year or the playoffs, just to kind of sit on the bench. I didn't play. And then my sophomore year, I made varsity. I started, and I started for the next 3 years. And being all, it's weird because you don't realize these really like the how the basketball world works at that age. Like I know I didn't realize it. I was kind of I guess a little delusional because I was a I guess a big fish in a small pond. Like Long Island basketball is not big when you talk about the country, right? And when you rank Long Island basketball among other cities or places other places around the country, it's not very high at all. And but I didn't realize that even compared to like the city, New York City basketball. Like I didn't even realize like the difference in that just because that's all I knew was Long Island basketball. So at the time, I'm thinking, oh, all right, well, I'm starting varsity as a sophomore. I'm playing well. And by the time I got to a senior, I was like, I'm going Division One, like for sure. It's like most high school kids, that's what most high school kids are saying or want to do. Every high school kid wants to go Division One. Nobody's really saying I want to go D2, I want to go D3. Like your goal is Division One. So I mean, that was my goal in high school, but I had a, I'm sure we'll dive into it, but I had a rude awakening my senior year. But so I guess you could say I was a little delusional, but also, I mean, my parents didn't, my older brother didn't really play basketball. So I was like the experiment, where my parents didn't really know anything. They didn't know AAU. They didn't know prep school at the time. They didn't know the exposure that you needed. Like we just thought, okay, you play well at Hicksville High School and you're gonna you go where you want to go, but that's not the way it works, So we had to figure that out. We definitely figured that out my senior year.
I could totally connect with you on that note because like I don't have any older siblings and like no one in my family like played competitive sports. Like I fell in love with the game really young and I started playing when I was in like second grade. So like my mom was thinking just like train and then like later down the line you'll play for your school team. Like she didn't know about AAU or any of this stuff. So like it wasn't until I met one of the older kids in my school. His dad like was coaching like a youth team or something like that, and we used to go to like Basketball City for like local AAU tournaments. And then he told me about Rising Stars. I played for them in the 8th grade, and then I got to go play for Riverside like my 9th and 10th grade year. But like of course I totally agree, like you're thinking like, oh, like you want to go play like Kentucky or Duke or somewhere like that, and like you're good at your school where you're playing because you're like putting up numbers like 20 something points per game. But it's not really like, it's like not really like as competitive. You're not gonna get like scouts at those games. So I got lucky because Riverside has connections with a lot of like those prep schools. So that's how I ended up going to Salisbury. But like later down the line, senior year, like you start like kind of getting realistic in a sense, like, oh no, I'm not gonna go play like at a Division One school, like.
But also you like we didn't have and I'm saying like some old ancient guy, but we didn't have like social media. It wasn't as big as
Yeah.
it is now. So
It's hard to contact coaches, I bet.
I mean that, but also like we didn't know what was I didn't know what was out there. I only knew where I was at. And where I was at, I was among the top players. I mean the top players where I was at in Long Island, they're not top, they're not ESPN top one. I didn't even know about ESPN top 100. I wasn't even close to ESPN top 100. But so I not having like social media and being able to see like what's going on in California and all the hoopers that are out there, like all the hoopers that are really across the country that are at a high level, kind of hurt. But also not playing AAU, like I played AAU very local.
Right.
Didn't go to nationals. Like I played, maybe the furthest I went might have been Pennsylvania, but I
What
stayed in, like,
organization did you play for? What
I
team?
was just with Lightning.
Oh, okay.
And that wasn't until like going into my senior year, maybe, you know, when I
Yeah.
started. Because all my parents knew was CYO basketball and
Right.
PA, and you're not getting any scouts that are going to any one of those leagues. It's like there's no chance. But also, you know, my senior year, I started to realize, wait a minute, like I'm playing in all these games in high school and I don't see any college coaches in the
Yeah.
stands, you know. And then as the year was going on, it started to hit me, like, you know, I have friends from other schools or other you know, guys who play different sports, and they're signing already in the beginning of the senior year. And I'm like, wait, like what's going on? And then it started, so everything hit me like very late. And you know, it was a eye-opening experience
Yeah, I
for sure.
totally agree. So coming out of high school, like you decided to attend Molloy College, which is a Division II school, I believe, and it was your only offer. Could you talk about like a little bit more about that
Yeah.
experience with and your mindset going into your freshman year with Molloy being your only college
Yeah.
offer?
Well, to back it up, so my parents started to put me in like hoop group
Right.
invitationals, like showcases and stuff. But like I did a sleepaway for hoop group, and there were supposed to be, like, you know, a lot of colleges. I didn't really see as many that were, you know, that were being like that was being publicized, that all these colleges are going to be there. And you know, I didn't really see, you know, who was going to be there. I'm not going to, like, I don't want to throw hoop group under the bus or anything. It's just my personal experience. But so I didn't really get any looks from hoop group. I got Keene University, which is like a Division III, and Manhattanville College, which is
Okay.
another Division III. They had me come on visits, but they were pretty much like, you know, this is Division III. You gotta pay tuition, like full tuition. Like we don't give scholarships, whatever.
Right.
And my parents couldn't do that. We couldn't do that. So that was cool and all, but those were like my only two like visits, just where like I went to the school, the coach like kind of walked me around, and then I went home. Like I didn't have visits. I didn't have coaches writing me letters. I didn't do any of that. I missed all that. And some of my friends I talk to even now, they say like that was one of the most fun time for them, because they're visiting all these colleges, they're spending the night, they're getting shown around, you know, coaches are writing them letters, they're getting letters in the mail. I didn't get any of that.
Right.
So then I started reaching out on my own to coaches, sending emails.
Yep.
And I sent an email to every single coach, Division One, Two, and I don't even know if I did three, but definitely Division One and Two, for sure in New York, and then in the surrounding area. So I did every, you know, the ECC, where Molloy, the conference Molloy plays in. Most of those schools are on Long Island. You know, Dowling used to be in the conference, or not a school anymore, I don't think. But there were so many. There was so I emailed all of them, and none of them got back to me. And my assistant coach, I think, talked to Adelphi. Maybe he knew the assistant coach, but he told him, you know, he can't play at this level. Like he's not ready for this. He's too
Yeah.
small to play at this level. So when my trainer Jay Hernandez knew the Molloy coach, he had him come to a workout, and he was like, just come watch this kid play. It's like April of his senior year, and he has not one offer, not one look. Like, just come take a look and, you know, see what you think. So he did the workout, and he liked what he saw, and off that was he had me come and do a visit. And then from the visit, he made an offer. So that was literally, I signed April of my senior year, which is, you know, so, which is so late for a senior to sign something. So it was a partial scholarship where I got half my freshman year and then like a set amount my senior year, or sorry, my next 3 years. So it's crazy because it's really crazy because we did the hype, the top 100 was at Molloy, but I didn't know about Molloy College. I don't know, it was a small school along the way. I didn't really know about it, and I didn't know where it was. And all I knew was I had to go to the top 100 for seniors, and it was at this school. I didn't know it was really even like a college, or I didn't even know anything about it. And I played so bad. And I remember saying, I can't, this gym is the worst gym I've ever played in. These baskets, these rims are terrible. I played so bad. And then when I went on my visit, I was, well, came into the, I was like, I'll never play in, that's a college, I'll never play there. And then I signed. I didn't even know it was the same school. And I went for the visit and he took me in the gym. I was like, there's no way. There's no way that this is the same, that this is the same gym that I said I'll never play at. And so it ended up, but it ended up working out. But you know, when I signed though, I was grateful. I was grateful for my trainer Jay, because he saved my, literally saved my career. I don't know what I would have done had he not told Charlie to come and watch the workout, because I literally had nothing. So I don't know what I would have done from there. My grades weren't that great, so it's not like I was getting, you know, getting into a whole bunch of schools because my grades weren't great. So I don't know, man. I don't know what I would have done, but I'm still to this day like eternally grateful for Jay Hernandez, who helped me on later down the road too, which we'll get into, and then Charlie Marquardt, who gave, was the only person to kind of give me a chance and let me come in as a freshman and like just rock out, like not put a leash on me like most freshmen. I got
Right.
lucky, you know. So I'm super grateful for those two.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, looks like the rims like were working in your favor because during your senior year you ended up averaging 23 points per game and was named the East Coast Player of the Year in 2014. So yeah,
No,
working out in your favor.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I had to put up a lot of shots to, but once it's your home court, it's like you know, you get used to the rims. The same thing happened to me here in Brescia when because when I played in Germany, we played Brescia for like a Euro Cup game, which is like a European competition. And I remember these rims are terrible. They're like super hard. And I was like, I would never play in this at that for that team, because that gym is terrible. The gym is great, but the rims are just so hard. And then like the next year I end up signing in Brescia for the, and I'm here for the last 3 years. So
You
it's crazy.
manifested it.
It's crazy, bro. It's crazy.
That's what a
Crazy.
lot of teams like who come play here. I go to Hobart College. Teams will like shoot the lights out in their gym against us, but then they come here, they shoot like the worst 3-point percentage ever, but like we can like knock them down. But the rims here, I can
Exactly.
agree, are like really stiff. So it's
But when you're shooting on them a lot,
like
right? You
every
get,
day we work out, we have pickups, so it's like second
now you're
nature to
used
us.
to, exactly the
Yeah.
same. It's the same.
So shout out Ev who helped me get Ev Chapo who helped get you on the show today. He was telling me that you chose to stay at Molloy College instead of transferring to another school. So like back then, I know the transfer portal it wasn't as popular as it is now. Did you ever was there ever a thought of any sort of going to play for another program before you made the decision to stay loyal?
So my freshman year, after my freshman year, I think I averaged like 15. I won rookie of the year, and I had a really good year, and I was still on like a partial scholarship. So, you know, I told them, look, I'm looking to transfer, you know, and I felt bad saying that, but again, like my goal was always to go D1. So I was thinking like Hofstra, Stony Brook, maybe I can kind of get into one of these schools. And it's just at the time, I guess that time is weird. Like coaches aren't like, I mean, I don't know, because no, like nobody came to me. I can only give you like my experience, but nobody was like, knocking my door down to have me come to their school. So if I was to transfer, it would have to be like all my doing of like I have to reach out to the Hofstra coach
Yeah.
and Stony Brook coach and see if they would take me and all. And before I did that, I had a conversation with Charlie Marquardt, like this is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking of transferring, like trying to go D1. And then we had a conversation, and then it came down to, all right, like we'll give you like a full ride, and I was like, we'll make your next 3 years of full tuition. And so I was like, all right. And then I ended up staying, and ultimately it turned out to be what I think is the best decision I could have made, because the next 3 years are like, I mean, not only on the court but off the court with the friends I made and friends I still have to this day. The memories that I have were great. And who knows? You transfer. Anytime you transfer, you're taking a chance that it's gonna work out. I mean, you're betting on yourself, which you always want to do, but it's still a chance. Like, you don't know if the coach is gonna like you. You don't know if you're gonna click in the system or if the opportunity is gonna be like, it's a risk. And I was comfortable. I had the keys kind of handed to me my freshman year, and so I made the decision to stay, and it was great. Now, I still finished Malloy. I had like 30,000 in student debt, but it could have been way worse, because I could have had to pay full tuition for 4 years, so I'm really not complaining. But so staying for the next 3 years was like the best decision I think I could have made, looking back.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, I know Coach T Tamar.
Yeah.
Used to train me when he was out in Long Island. Now he's down in North Carolina. When I was a senior and I was going through the recruiting process, he'd always like preach to me, go where you're wanted, not where you want to go, in a sense, because where you want to go, like, yeah, like your eyes catch all like the glitz and glamour of it all, but like that situation might not be for you, he was telling me. So if like a coach is like writing you letters, if he's like willing to talk to you, that's where like you should look into that opportunity like much more than like the other ones where you like want to go per se.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know I've seen him say that, and he has like he's the best, man, with like preaching, just giving the kids the real. Like, he
Yeah.
doesn't sugarcoat anything. He keeps everything like brutally honest, but that you need that. But he's absolutely right, bro, because you go to where you want to go and you're not wanted, you can get overlooked, you can get
Get
treated
pushed out,
poorly,
kind of.
you get pushed. Exactly. So yeah. That's definitely great advice.
No, yeah, he's dropped like a lot of gems like over the years. Like I remember he would like I didn't plan it because I was at prep school at the time, but he put on like workouts and bring down like some of the college coaches from like
Yeah, I
Long
remember
Island and stuff like
him.
that. And I would like the shirts that he would wear, D1, D2, JUCO, D3, NAIA. It's like all the same level. And then he even like stopped the workout. It's like a really cool clip. I love this is like probably one of my favorite clips on his Instagram. It's like he stops the whole workout, starts saying like this is a disgrace, like you guys like got an opportunity here, you guys aren't making the most out of the opportunity. I'm sure you've seen it before. And then all of a sudden straight back to work. Then the
Yeah,
energy
he's
is just contagious in the gym. Everyone's like competing at such a high level. So he's really good at pushing us to get to that next level. I could say for a
a
fact.
monster. He's a monster. He's a
I took
monster.
So in 2014, you were inducted into Malloy's Athletic Hall of Fame. So looking back at that accomplishment, what comes to mind?
Man, it's crazy. I just recently was inducted into the Conference Hall of Fame as well.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So like, it's crazy because I had to do my speech for, well, I did a speech for both of them. I was away, so I didn't get to do the set go to the ceremony because I was overseas. But for both, but in doing the speech, it's like, especially the second one. Not that the first one wasn't, that I'm like overlooking the first one, but especially the second one, it's like I'm looking back and thinking about when I was in high school. I had nothing. I had no offers. I was, I thought I was gonna go D1. And then I didn't have anything. And I even had coaches saying that I wasn't good enough and that I wasn't big enough to play Division II. not even Division One, but also Division Two. Then to look, you fast forward and you're inducted into the School Hall of Fame and the Conference Hall of Fame, and it's like, if you would have told me that in high school, I would have been like, how? Like, with what I have now, how could that even be possible? So it's a blessing, man. It was truly, truly humbled because, like I said, man, even my parents, like even to now, like as I'm in my 9th year as a professional or my 10th year as a professional, I still have conversation with my parents, and we talk about when I was in high school as a senior, and they didn't even think I was gonna be able to play college basketball. We would go to games, like we would go to CW Post and go to games, and my dad, he didn't tell me then, but he told me down the road. He would be watch the guys play, and he's like, "How can my son play with these guys?" And then literally, like 2 years after that, I was playing at CW Post, So
Right.
we didn't think it was possible, and but I just kind of, it's all the work I've always, and that's kind of what it put the chip on my shoulder, and I think it allowed me to. Between, not being wanted and having the chip on my shoulder and the work that I put in, I think is how I was able to do it, and it's like it's a blessing, man. Truly a blessing.
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, when I was going through the recruiting process, like I'm like a wing, but like I would be forced to like post up and stuff like that. So I'm a little like undersized and I'm like skinnier than a lot of like guys at that position as well. So like a lot of coaches would tell me that, oh, I'm like too skinny, that I'm like undersized and stuff like that. And I really didn't have anyone like pushing me in my corner, like a coach like saying like oh, like you should take this guy. It's like me like staying up until like 2 in the morning emailing coaches, then thank God for my mom and dad. They would drive me to all like these camps and stuff so that like I can get seen at the end of the day. But then like I end up like getting hurt like senior year, so I like missed like a lot of time. 'Cause like like that part of your senior year where it's like really crucial and it's like when people are like really looking. So I like missed out on that. And to your point, like how you said your trainer was like pushing you and said like, oh, told the Malloy coach to come down. I actually had like my old math teacher, he was our former varsity coach at my boarding school. He like told me to get in touch with the coach here at Hobart, and even drove me to like watch them play. And he was like, "Do you think you can play here?" So like, I thank God for him because now I'm in the opportunity where I like have a great opportunity to play next year because I redshirted my first year. But even like that your point of having that chip on your shoulder, like, yeah, I didn't play this year. I was like redshirting because I decided to. Like this was all I had, you know what I mean? Like I'm like behind like a lot of guys. I would get a lift in before practice. I would shoot right after my lift, stay after practice, shoot a little after that. Like always stay in the gym. So like there's a saying like you gotta like stay ready so you don't have to like get ready later on. So
Bro, if you keep your like it, for me it's like I you keep your head down and you just like you work, you work, you work, you
yeah.
work, but then you kind of can tend to get lost in the work, and then
Yeah.
to kind of pick your head up and kind of like look where you're at and look how far you came, and then that'll make you appreciate so much, so much more, because you're always thinking like, and this is one of the things I realized like when I was writing my speech was like, you're always chasing the next thing, that you forget like you are further than you even thought that you would be. Maybe
Yeah.
like for me it was like I put my head down and I go and I work, 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 work. And then it wasn't until really I had to do this speech that I kind of picked my head up and was able to like look around and like see where I'm at and see where I was and see how far I came and all the things I had to go through. And when you do that, it makes you so much more appreciative. And for me, it's just you gotta get, but you need to do that though. You gotta
Yeah.
get lost in the work. Like that's so, so important. Gotta get lost in the work.
I'm in the midst of it right now. So like hopefully one day I can get to that point.
You
I
just
mean.
keep going, bro. You like all this stuff is gonna get thrown at you, and you just kind of like you take it and you just keep going, keep working, keep working, keep working, and like as long as you keep doing that, like you'll get where you want to be. It'll just happen. Like for me, it just happened. I don't know how, but I know I stuck to the work. I stuck to the grind, and it just like it, I always say, like even my boy Uche. I don't know if you ever met my boy Uche.
No, I don't think I have.
No, but he I always say to him, like, bro, it's just gonna work out. Like it'll work out.
Right.
So for somehow, it's just gonna work out. You just put your head down, work it, and it'll work out. Like I'm a firm believer in that.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, at what point did you realize that you could play professional basketball?
I think I went through another delusional period throughout college. Because again, now all I really know is what I know. Like all I know is Division Two. I know the teams I played in Division Two, whether they're from, we played some teams from Florida, from North Carolina, and I always played well. So I know Division Two level, I dominated. So my book, I'm good enough to play pro, like
Right.
it's what I was thinking. And I literally went through the same cycle I went through in high school, where like I got to my senior year and now, and I just had a dominant senior year. I was eighth in the country in scoring. I was first in the country. I led the country in steals in Division Two. Like I had all these accolades that I just accumulated over the 4 years, and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go pro. Until like I had no agents reaching out, I had no teams reaching out, I had like the draft wasn't even a possibility, like there was none of that until so I graduated and had nothing. And then my coach reached out to me, said he got an email from the Boston Celtics
Oh, wow.
basketball operations guy who wanted me to come and try out for the G League team, the Maine Red Claws. And I mean, I think we're gonna kind of get into down the road, like because it's about being cut and all that stuff. So I'll get into that maybe a little later. But I think when that happened was when I was like, oh, okay, well, I always throughout these 4 years, I played so well, I think I could play pro. But that kind of confirmed it, getting that email of like, we want him to come to this tryout for the Red Claws,
Right.
But at that time, it was the NBA D League,
Yeah.
not the G League. So, that kind of stamped it for me. Like, okay, I can play pro. If they saw me and they reached out to my coach and they're interested to have me come and try out, then it's a invite only tryout. Then I think I could play pro.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
that was like the start of like my professional chasing my professional journey.
Yeah, definitely. So on January 29th, 2015, you started your professional career with Iskra Svit of the Slovak Basketball League. What was your experience playing for that team, and what was the transition like from playing at the college level to now playing professional?
That was wild times, man, because I signed with them. So I graduated 2014 in whatever, May, June. And then I didn't have anything until. So I was reaching out on LinkedIn, on Facebook, because I had nothing, I had nobody. I signed with an agent who was like super small time from Canada. He never came through with any jobs or anything. And so I was taking it on, like I was putting it on my shoulders to try and find myself a job. So I was literally on LinkedIn every morning, emailing or messaging like hundreds a day of like
Wow.
anybody who had agent, scout, coach, anything in their bio, I was sending them an email. And I'm telling you, bro, it was easily a few hundred a day for like months. that I was sending messages. It was wild.
Wow.
And finally, somebody reached out and was like, "Do you want?" And mind you, my brother owns his own construction company. So I was like doing that for money when I graduated, while working out and while trying to like find a job overseas. And so I was miserable, because I hate that. I hate that type of work, construction. Like, all I want to do is play basketball. Like, why am I swinging a hammer? You know? And so some agent reached out and was like, "Yo, I have a job for you." The money was beyond terrible. And he's like, "It's in Slovakia. Would you be interested?" I said, "When bags are packed already, like, when do I go?" I didn't ask any questions about the league, about the team. You say, "I got a job, send me the contract. I don't care what the money's for. I'm getting on a plane, I'm going. When do I have to go?" This was like he texted he hit me up on like a Tuesday. And he's like, "You got to be out there on Thursday." So I had 2 days. I was like, "Done. Book the flight. Bags will be packed. I'm out." So I got out there, and the GM takes me into the apartment. And the apartment is, mind you, I know nothing about overseas basketball. I know nothing about Europe. I know nothing about Slovakia, the league, nothing. And he takes me to my apartment, and he opens the door, and it's literally almost like what your dorm room is, bro. But it was like you walk in through this door, and you have a bedroom on your right, a bedroom straight ahead. So it was two bedrooms. Then you have on your left was a door for a toilet, and next to that was another door for a shower and a sink. That was my space. And he dropped my bags and he looks at me. He goes, "You good?" I said, I guess so." There was no TV. There was no kitchen. There was no living room. There was nothing. There was no Wi-Fi. I sat down on the bed after this long flight, like 9 hours to get there. Like, it was crazy. Sat on the bed. I'm staring. Mind you, the bed is like this tiny little, like, twin bed. That's not even a bed. It's like couch cushions with a sheet on it. Stare at the wall, and I'm like, "What the hell? Where am I at, and what am I doing?" And my phone doesn't work, no Wi-Fi. I had to leave the apartment because I was like, "I need Wi-Fi. Like, I'm supposed to, my contract says I'm supposed to have Wi-Fi. There's no TV, no nothing. Like, I'm just staring at the wall." And finally, I got up, and the gym was across the street. So I went across the street. I walked into the GM's office, and I was like, "Yo, like, I have no Wi-Fi. Like, what am I supposed to do?" He's like, "Oh, Wi-Fi is gonna come in a week, and you can use, there's a hotel like up the road. If you need Wi-Fi, you just sit in the lobby until the Wi-Fi comes for your apartment." So I was spending my time, like, I had a girlfriend at the time. I was talking to her in the lobby of the hotel, and then like when I had to go to bed, I leave, go walk up the street, I go and I go to sleep, bro. And then I had a roommate too, which is like over, like you have your own apartment. You're supposed to have your own apartment. I had a roommate who lived in that other room. It was terrible, bro. But I ended up, so I got there. I practiced the next day, practiced the next day. The next day had a game. I dislocated my shoulder, and I had to go home. I was there for like another month trying to like get it right. I needed surgery, so I went home. So literally in like 3 days of being overseas, I was playing really well in the first game. I think I might have had 16. I can't remember, but I played very well because they wanted to sign me to come back. They said, "Go home, get your surgery. We'll sign you to come back." And I said, "Okay." Went home, got the surgery, and that was technically my first professional year. That's what happened. It was like a week, and then I signed it, and then I did my surgery, and I went back. But the worst part is, I knew what I was going back to, that situation again. And it was so then I went back my second year, and I was there for a little longer before I got hurt. But yeah, so that was like that was first year. It was eye-opening. Oh wait, it was crazy, man. It was crazy.
Wow, that's insane. Did you ever struggle at first to like shoot the ball in the games? 'Cause I remember when I went over to play in Greece with this Greek organization on Super League Athletic Academy, my junior year and senior year. I remember we were in last year we were in what do you call it, Sparta, and like I couldn't hit a three for my life. Like the FIBA ball felt so weird. But by the time we were in Athens, I like figured it out a little bit. Like the line was kind of weird. Like the hoops were weird. Like
Yeah.
what you were talking about before. But what was your experience with that?
So even in college, bro, I was never a shooter. I was always like more athletic than everybody else, athletic, like more quick. And I was able to get to the basket, finish like super well at the basket, or just like little mid-range shots, like threes. I never shot threes.
Oh, wow.
I don't even know what my career threes in college were, but low 30s or high 20s. Like I just was able to get to the rim well. Like in college, I had one game, I had 39 points. I didn't even attempt a three.
Wow.
So like I when I went
Jeez.
over there, I was thinking I'm gonna play the same way. And it worked there, but it wasn't as high of a level as like eventually like where I would end up playing. But so I wasn't really even shooting threes when I went over there to Slovakia that first year, and then again in the second year. So it was more just getting to the rim and finishing tough, just tough buckets. But like I felt that, you know, like I would leave the game and I would have like 18, and it felt like I had 40
Wow.
because of how hard you're getting banged. The guys are bigger, they're like touching you when as you're laying up, you're getting all touched up and everything, you're getting knocked on the floor, and it's just like you feel worse. And then at that time I was like, no, I gotta learn how to shoot the ball, I gotta learn how to shoot the three because this ain't it.
Wow, that's insane.
Yeah, bro.
So in 2018, you signed with the Lakeland Magic, which at the time was the D League affiliate for the Orlando Magic. Can you talk a little bit about your experience playing in the D League at the time?
So I think if you back it up, it actually was Erie BayHawks.
Oh, my bad.
I want to say 20, maybe 16, 17.
Okay.
That was my first stint, and that was only because after my second. That second year in Slovakia, I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't play here. I gotta do something else. And full circle moment, Jay Hernandez, who helped me get into college, was the assistant coach of the Orlando Magic. And he had hit me up just to keep in touch and was like, yo, what do you got going on? It was the summer after that second year in Slovakia. I was like, I got nothing, bro. Like, I got a guy, an agent who got me to Slovakia. He wants me to play in Iceland, and I'm not trying to do that. Like, what? Like, I have nothing. He's like, why don't you go to the Erie BayHawks? They're our D League affiliate. Go to the Erie BayHawks tryout. The coach is very defensive minded, old school. I think that it'd be a good fit for you. We'll waive the fee. Just go, show up, and do the tryout. I was like, bet. So he sent me all the information when the tryout day was. I went, and I killed the tryout. Killed the tryout. He was like, yo, why don't you he asked me, who's your agent? I said, I don't have an agent. The head coach asked. So he gave me his agent, put me in touch. I signed with him. He goes, we don't want to put you in the draft, but we want to bring you as like a tryout player to training camp. From training camp, though, you got to make the team. I was like, done. So I went back home, was hype, and when training camp started, I went and I went to training camp. But that whole training camp was another wild story. I could be, bro, if I'm rambling, you gotta let me know
Oh,
because
no, you're good. You're good. Keep going, man.
when I got to training camp, so I drove out there, Erie 7 hours away from Long Island. So I drove out there. Training camp's like, it's like a week long, and they have like 17 guys maybe come out, guys they drafted, guys they like me, tryout players, whatever. And so it's like 17 guys in the training camp, and they got to cut like five guys, and they're going to take 12. In the D League, though, now it's different in the G League. But in the D League, you can only dress 10 guys. You can only travel with 10 guys. You can have two extra guys, but they're practice players who don't get paid, and they don't play, they don't dress, they don't travel. They're just practice guys, and they can try and no, they sorry, they only you only get paid though if you play a game, if you dress.
Okay.
So if you're the whole year as a practice player, you're not getting paid. You're just
Wow.
there, you're going to practice. And if somebody gets hurt or if you are killing and they want to try to put you in a roster, they can. And only then will you get paid because you pretty much get like game checks,
Yeah.
So I did the training camp, and the training camp was like super up and down, bro. I wasn't ready for the NBA three. Like I couldn't, I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't ready for the NBA style of play. Like I didn't really know anything about the NBA. It's different than overseas. It's different than college, obviously. It's like a whole nother game. And so training camp, the week was up and down. The last thing that we had was in Toronto. We had an exhibition game against the 905 Raptors.
Yep.
First quarter goes by. Mind you, 17 guys on the bench. First quarter goes by, I don't get in. Second quarter goes by, don't get in. Halftime comes, whatever. Third quarter, don't get in. Fourth quarter starts. So I haven't played yet. Three quarters is the last thing before. After this game, we're going to go back to Erie, go to the hotel. They're going to make cuts. And then the season, they're going to start the season like the next day. So third quarter, don't play. Fourth quarter starts. And I'm on the bench. Swear to you, bro. I'm on the bench while the game's going on. I'm like, I'm going to get cut. So we're gonna get back to Erie. It's gonna be about a 3 hour ride. So we'll get back. I'm gonna pack all my stuff from the hotel. I'll load it into my car. Got a 7 hour drive. This is while the game's going on. I got a 7 hour drive home. I should be home by like 1 or 2 a.m. Because like obviously I'm gonna get cut. So last like 5 minutes of the game, fourth quarter. Mind you, 16 people have been in the game. I'm the only one who hasn't played,
Right.
who hasn't played yet. Last 5 minutes of the game, he goes, John, go ahead, go in. I think I end. So then I was like, all right, whatever. Like, I'll go in. I'm just going to hoop. Like, there's no pressure. I already know I'm cut. So I'm just going to hoop. I think I ended up with like 5 points, five rebounds, five steals, like five, five, and
Wow.
five in like 5 minutes. It was crazy. And, finished that, got on the bus, was still like, there's no chance he keeps me. I know I'm gonna be one of the guys who's gonna get cut. Hold on, let me plug this in. My fault.
No, you're good.
So we get back, so we get back to the hotel. He goes, John, come on, I gotta talk to you. He said, as of like 2 hours ago, I was cutting you. And it was only that last 5 minutes. That is the reason why, that you were able to show me like you can like really you could play. But we want to take you, and we're gonna take you as a practice player. Now you don't get paid, you don't travel, you don't dress, you don't play, you don't sit on the bench for games. All you do is practice. We'll give you an apartment. If you want to do that, it's entirely up to you. You can work your way in, and then we'll see what happens. And I was like, done. Like, yeah, I'll do it. So he was like, all right, cool. And then from training camp, I was good, man. It was a blessing. Got made the team, and then from there is a whole nother story. But that's kind of how that went to start.
Wow, that's amazing, man. And you ended up finishing your career with the Lakeland Magic,
Yeah.
averaging 12.1 points per game and even shooting 45.2% from the 3-point range.
Yeah, which is a whole nother journey because when he took the chance on me, Coach Pete, shout out Coach Pete, because again, is another guy who kind of gave me a start, resurrected my career because I don't know what I was gonna do had I not gotten that. And he took a chance on me, so he had to kind of play it safe. And again, like I said, I was not a shooter, bro. The third year in the D League, I shot 45 from three, but I was not allowed to shoot threes. We're talking about the NBA, bro. Like
Yeah.
NBA, NBA G League. I was not. He would say, "Bro, John, you are not allowed to shoot threes. Like, I took a corner three, I'll never forget, home game against the South Bay Lakers, transition, corner three, which is, I was wide open, one of the
That's a
best
good
shots you can
shot.
shoot.
Yeah.
Great shot. Rims out or back rim or whatever. He calls a timeout and kills me. How many times I gotta tell you, you are not shooting threes. You get the ball and you try to get to the basket. Because in my debut, I had 17. Finally, I was able to play after like 12 games of being a practice player. We had some injuries. I got my chance, and I had, I think I had 17 in my debut, and but they were
Wow.
all layups and free throws, no threes. Like, I was not shooting threes. I couldn't get the NBA distance yet. So he said, like, he calls timeouts or script. How many times I gotta tell you? You know, I took a chance on you. You're gonna listen to me. You're not shooting threes. You drive and you go to the basket. You get to the hole, and you're not shooting threes. If you want to shoot threes, you go play for somebody else. Like, done.
Wow.
I won't shoot threes, so I want to play. If you don't want me to shoot threes, I won't shoot threes. Then the next year in Lakeland, new coach, new organization, new everything, and I had that instilled in my mind, like, I can't shoot threes. But this coach is like yelling at me for not shoot, for turning down threes. So it took me like a whole, my second year to get out of that mindset. And then my third year with the trainer that we had with Lakeland for those 2 years that I was working with, shout out my boy Hex. He's with the Orlando Magic now as one of their strength guys. And he kind of just turned my whole shot around, man. He was like a hybrid. He was like Ev. Right, where
Right.
you can get in the weight room and do some strength and conditioning, and then you get on the court, you do some skills work. So he was both. So he'd be like, "You're not dropping your hips enough. Let's go get on the trap bar and do some deadlifts and stuff to try to like get that load on your legs, right? So we can get more power on your jumper." So he ultimately is the reason why my whole jump shot kind of turned around. And then that year, like you said, was a career year for me from three. So, but it was a journey to get there, bro. Because it went from like you're not allowed to like shooting it super well and super efficient. So,
I mean, like that's what's so amazing I feel about basketball. Like 1 minute you can be like not the best at something, but then you come back the next year, you spend like the whole off season working on it, and you just like kind of add layers and layers to your game over the
yeah.
years, I feel like.
Oh, it's the work. There's really. I mean, there's certain things in the game, like an IQ is hard to teach, right? You either kind of have a feel for the game and you know the game, or you don't. It's kind of hard to teach that. But like these like little things, like having a left hand or shooting threes, shooting free throws, shooting pull-ups, like that's all stuff you rep out and it becomes muscle memory. And, you know, I didn't rep it so hard just because I was always able to get to the basket. I never really, like, I don't want to say I never needed to, so I didn't do it. I don't know. It was just never like a thing I worked on
Yep.
until it was like, okay, now you have to. Because my second year was, they were like, look, this is the NBA. Like, you got to be able to shoot threes. Like, you're in the G League because you want to try to get a call up. Well, you're not getting a call up if you can't shoot it efficiently from the corners, at least. So then it was like, you know what, you're right. Like, I want to try to get called up. And then so then by my third year, I was on the call up radar. I never ended up getting a chance. But yeah, bro, just it's the work. Like those things are all you can learn how to shoot, you can learn how to dribble, you can learn how to do all that. So
That's also around the time when the game started to change a little bit and started to become like more perimeter orientated, like less
yeah,
like post
it
touches, way
became more
more
analytic.
timeout. Yep, definitely.
Yeah. The analytics are like, bro, the analytics are crazy. I went and worked out for the Houston Rockets. I had a mini camp with the Houston Rockets the year maybe 2018.
Right.
And they were literally like, because I think they were one of the first to kind of start doing that, no
Yeah.
mid-range threes and running gun and threes. And I remember them in the workout, they're like, look, we don't shoot twos, we don't shoot pull-ups. If you have a layup, you take it. Otherwise,
kick it out and shoot the three.
Threes. Yeah.
Yep.
There's no floaters. There's no pull-ups.
That's the D'Antoni offense right
I'm
there.
like, what? It was wild, bro. It was crazy. But yeah, and now a lot of the NBA teams kind of shifted away from that. But it's different overseas. They're not really. We have one team in our league right now who's trying to emulate that, and they're not doing so well. But last year they had the same system, different coach, different players, and they were hooping. They were like top five in the league, just run and gun, all threes. And it was working, but this year, different personnel, different coach, not working for them so well. But so,
Yeah, definitely. So currently, you play for Germani Brescia of the Italian League, LBA. You're coming off of the Italian Cup Championship and a season as the LBA's best defender. When hearing about those accolades, what comes to mind?
yeah, for me, the Defensive Player of the Year one is one I've always wanted and never got, and I've always taken pride on the defensive end. Like I love getting a bucket, I love scoring, but for me, like there's something about being able to not let your opponent score. For me, that's like, I don't know, it's just like I don't know what it is. It's something that
Personal.
maybe has to do with like my pride. It's an ego thing, maybe. Like you're not scoring on me. Like, and when you do score on me, I'm pissed. Like I'm genuinely pissed. So I've always took pride in my defense from even when I was like, bro, when I was a kid, like 7, 8 years old, my parents were telling me like the league that I was playing in, like PAL league or whatever, they had to change the rule that you weren't allowed to pick up full court anymore because they weren't able to get the ball across half court. So I had to drop back and pick up and let them cross. So it's
That's same
always
as
been,
CYO.
it's always been like that for me. But the I don't know. So the league I was in was PAL when they changed it. It wasn't the CYO league, but it's always been that way. So I always wanted that DPOY. Like I said, I led the nation in steals my senior year, and I didn't get DPOY. I felt like I had some very good defensive years in the G League, and because I was always guarding the other team's best player, even in the G League, guys that are two-way guys that are on assignment from their NBA teams. Like I'm guarding them, and I'm thinking like I'm locking up. I deserve some type, but never got the recognition. So last year, and then even in Germany, same thing. Italy, my first year, same thing. I felt like I definitely deserved it, didn't get it. So last year to be able to get that and finally take that home was super special, man. Super special.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah.
So I know we mentioned Ev a lot on the podcast so far on this episode. Can you talk a little bit about your relationship with him over the years? And I know he was telling me when I was home when we were working out a lot that you guys are planning like a future podcast.
Yeah, shout out Ev, man, because I've known him since freshman year of high school through Jay Hernandez. And is one of probably the hardest worker I know. Like, even for myself, like there are days where I'm like, I'm not working out today. And then I talk to Ev, what'd you do? I worked out like 3 times. Meanwhile, I took a day off, so I feel like a bum. And this guy got 3 workouts in. And so having somebody like that in your close circle to kind of always push you is great to have. Everybody's gotta have somebody like Ev. And then what he's doing now is so special because I've been saying it to him for years, like, bro, you need to be a trainer. Like you are. He like is he's so passionate about it, but also he's so knowledgeable about everything. Like he does his research. He knows he does his research on both ends though. To have a hybrid, like he helped me out with my knee pain. I had bad tendonitis in my knee last year. So all summer he gave me like stuff to do in the weight room, and I have no knee pain now, you know. So the fact that he knows all that stuff, the fact he's so passionate about it, like for me, I mean, that's my boy, but also like every off season I have, like he's one of my go-tos to like to get work in because he's really, really nice with it. And then yeah, like we always have like conversations on the phone. Our conversation would be like an hour on the phone, and we're like, bro, how do let's just start a podcast. Like we pretty much have a podcast on our phone calls, like let's just like let the world hear about like what we're talking about. So yeah, we plan on doing that just to kind of, you know, I don't know, have fun. I don't know what it'll be or whatever, but we enjoy talking. We enjoy talking basketball. There's other things we want to incorporate into it to help athletes like you know, my brother's a financial advisor, so bring him on. Let's talk about money. Let's talk about finance. Let's talk about what players are doing with their contracts, what they should be doing with their contracts, from when they get in as a pro to when they retire. Try to set them up for when the ball stops bouncing because it happens for everybody. Mental coaches, which is a super important part of the game, and I think it's growing now. So have somebody like that come on. So we have a bunch of ideas that we want to do. So we're kind of excited to get that started.
Yeah, it's amazing. Shout out the MVP brand, Ev's
Yeah.
training brand.
That's our cool.
I really agree with you. Every time I text Ev, like, yo, I'm trying to get in the gym, because like when we really started working out was during my winter break. When I was home for like 2 months, basically, 'cause I redshirted my first year, so my coach told me to like go home and train. So I was like kind of in like a dark spot with basketball at that time. Like I didn't like I wanted to get better, but like I was like, oh man, how am I gonna get in the gym? Ev blessed, man. Like 2 times a day we would be in the gym. Like he all these different gyms we'd have, runs, you name it. He even has like a weight room downstairs in his house with all
Yeah.
like with crazy equipment and stuff like that. Like my hips, I used to have like crazy tight hips. Now like from like the workouts that like he put me through, like now I can get into like those like low positions like h to handle the rock better. So like shout out Ev, man. He's a great trainer at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Great guy as well.
Yeah, he's really nice. And this guy goes to like seminars and stuff, or he'll go and watch like if Drew
Watches
Hand
podcasts all day.
oh, podcast. He's a freak,
He's
but
obsessed with basketball.
he's
I mean,
obsessed.
you gotta be obsessed with it to like be good at it, he told me one day, I remember.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah, I
So
totally agree. So we're coming to the end right now, and the last question, well, last point I want to talk about is you're a guy like who drops a lot of gems. Like Tamar's told me, Ev's told me, and even like when you came down to Freeport, Coach T's birthday game that day, you dropped some gems on us. I was in like that was my freshman year of high school at the time. So, do you have any advice for the younger generation of basketball players like myself?
man, like I touched earlier, like you gotta be obsessed with it. It can't be like a part-time thing. Like you gotta be obsessed with it. And you gotta get lost in the work. But also for me, one thing I found that I feel like helps me that I don't know if people like believe in it or not, but like manifesting and envisioning what you want. I think is super important. I feel like I've used that. I used that my senior year. I used it really honestly throughout my whole entire career. Sometimes without even realizing that I did it. Other times more conscious. But like for a quick example was like my senior year. I put like I forget 5 or 6 bullet points of the things that I kind of wanted to accomplish that year, and I put it by my door, and I hit 5 out of the 6. One was 2,000 point scorer, but I was like 692 points away. So I had to have 690 in the season, right? Which was like I didn't even come close to that. That was averaging 23 a game. I didn't even come close to that going into my senior year. Didn't know if it was possible. I was like, I'm gonna write it down. I'm gonna look at it every day. I'm gonna say it every day, and it happened. Player of the year, that happened. First team all conference, obviously that happened. All Met player of the year, that happened. The only one that didn't happen was win a ring. But I don't know, bro. I firmly believe in that you have to, yeah, gotta have faith and you gotta be able to envision what you want and see it, but you can't do that and then like go sit on the couch because I'm
Yeah.
envisioning it's gonna happen. You gotta combine both and be obsessed with the work and obsessed with the grind and also see it and believe it. And I think like you could really do anything that you want to do, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Petricelli, for coming on the show today, and I wish you luck with the best with the rest of your season, sir.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Gen Z Hoops. Make sure to follow, like, and subscribe on Instagram, LinkedIn, and all major social media platforms at Gen Z Hoops. You can tune in and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and every other podcast platform on the planet. Get ready for the next episode.